are getting started. Thank you for being here and welcome to everyone. This is the City Council Study Meeting for the City of South Jordan. Today is Tuesday, June 4th, 2024. My name is Dawn Ramsey. I have the privilege of serving as Mayor of the City of South Jordan with this outstanding City Council seated beside me. Thank you to each of you for your service to the city and to all of our administrative staff who are here with us. We appreciate you so much. Thank you for all you do and for being here with us. We are going to open this meeting with an invocation by Councilmember Kathy Johnson.
Our Heavenly Father, we're so grateful that we're able to meet this day. We're grateful for the many blessings that we have in our city and in our nation, for the freedom to speak and to the freedom of being able to live in such a great community. We ask thee to bless us that we will be able to address the concerns that are before us. Help us to use wisdom and to be blessed with thoughtfulness and to be guided by thee, to come to resolutions that will be in the best benefit for our community. We ask thee to please watch over our many staff members who work so hard for this community, to keep it safe and to protect it and to fulfill the residents' needs for water and electricity and all the other services that are so vital. We ask thee to watch over us and to guide us this night. In the name of thy Son, Jesus Christ, amen.
Amen.
Thank you, Mrs. Johnson. We are now going to go to our coordination. Does anybody have anything that you want to coordinate, you need to go over?
I'm curious. Go ahead. Are you going to the Capitol tomorrow for the Martha Houston?
I am.
Okay.
I am
as well.
Good.
Kathy, are you going?
Yes.
Okay.
Great.
What's good?
It's girls only, sorry.
No.
You can come.
You can come.
No, you can come.
Tomorrow they are, there will be men there.
That'll be fun.
Tomorrow is the send-off for Martha Hughes Cannon's statue that's been at the Capitol waiting to go to Washington, D.C. for quite some time. Tomorrow night is the send-off, and they're having a party and at the Capitol.
Oh,
yeah, a big event.
I didn't get a
it'll
haircut,
cool.
That's okay.
No, it's going to be, it'll be great.
Yeah.
That'll be fun, so anybody who wants to come, it's from 5 to 8 tomorrow night. I will be in a booth where you can ask a female elected official any question you'd like to.
Oh, I was hoping
like
it was a dunking booth,
hour.
Mayor,
yeah,
come
no.
on.
I'm not going to hold it in that. Yeah.
That's
so
cool.
Anyway, just for 45 minutes, I'll be in that booth with the mayor of Bountiful.
Good.
So, yeah, and otherwise just kind of be out and about with everybody and whatever it is, you know? So, anyway, yeah, it's the send-off, and I know that actually at the end of the night, they're hoping to have everybody literally send Martha off as the statue leaves.
Is it on a
Utah.
Semi or something?
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait. I'm
so it'll be neat.
She's such a good
yeah.
Girl.
And it's rare, very rare, that any state swaps out one of their two statues in our nation's capital as to who represents their state. So,
yeah,
kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
Anybody have anything else? Okay. All right, let's move on. We'll just do a discussion about our regular council meeting, run through the agenda. The first four items we have on a consent action. The first one is authorizing the mayor to sign the interlocal cooperation agreement between Salt Lake County and South Jordan City for the South Jordan Recreation Center pool expansion. That thing is 1,000 years waiting, right? That has taken a long time. It's taken a long time. So that's kind of very exciting to have on the agenda. Does anybody have any questions about that?
No.
Okay.
Agreement's pretty straightforward.
It's good stuff. Yeah, it's good. We're excited about that. All right. We have appointing members to the Arts Council, which we decided as a body that we felt good about supporting those appointments. The third item is designating the interim emergency successors for 24-25 and identification of alerting authority and individuals authorized to send alerts. We do that every year. As far as staff goes, emergency succession. Should anything happen and Dustin be unable to fulfill his duties as city manager during an emergency, who would be the next person in line? And every department has the three successors listed in order. So
it's a requirement from the state statute as well as our own ordinance to do that. So,
So it's approving that, and there's just a few changes. Just a couple changes because we had some people turn over. And,
we got a new public works director last year.
Yeah.
So that's reflected in those changes.
Yeah. And then the fourth item is appointing members to the Bingham Creek Park Authority, which we've also discussed. So there's no questions on those. The next one is amending the budget, the fiscal year 23-24 budget, that ends the end of this month on June 30th. This is something we do every year as well. And Mr. Shelton sent in some good questions, and Sunil was able to answer those. Did anybody have any questions or anything you want to talk about in this meeting before the next meeting about that?
I saw the questions. I haven't read the answers. Are you going to review those in the next meeting? Or should we just go to our email and read them?
If you want me to, but if you need further clarification from my email, you can let me know. I'll just address those ones.
Thank you. Okay, and then we have ordinance 2024-12, amending portions of a section, an insurance section of our city code. Related to commercial haulers and waste programs. I think Ray is Ray the one talking about that? Yeah. Anybody have any questions for Mr. Garrison about that in this meeting?
So this is on the...
The first three
This is
on.
Not the consent.
No, the last two are not. The first four are together in the consent.
Four.
The last two are not.
She said
okay.
First three.
So this is our requirement of the haulers, the insurance that they need to carry. Is that what
there's another amendment to that, a different chapter in that code talking about the size of dumpsters that we offer first.
All right.
They don't talk about it.
Okay. Great.
Anybody have any other questions on that or any questions about our regular agenda? We also have the cast from Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat coming.
Oh, I
They'll perform
that.
A number. It's not on this agenda. It's
okay.
On the one for the next meeting, but they will come and perform. I can actually tell you what they're coming to do. They're going to do Song of the King. So, yeah, the Pharaoh song. So they're going to come perform that tonight.
Fun.
And that will be fun. So, and so far tickets seem to be selling well,
mm-hmm.
Right? Tickets are selling pretty well. So look forward to that. If there's no other questions about our regular agenda, that's the entire council meeting agenda. It's good. Okay. All right. Well, then let's go on to our discussion items first. We have our friends from DAI here, and we're going to invite them to come on up to the table and chat with us about Altitude Homes. We've had conversations before.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Nice
it's never intimidating to sit down in front of all of you.
No, we're nice. We're totally nice. We're not scared.
Well,
yeah.
I appreciate that. And I do appreciate the chance to sit down and talk with you as a body. We came in your last work session, gave a presentation that we received some feedback on. We really appreciate that feedback. Based on that, what we heard was that the product mix that we had put together looked good. That the design we had put together was good, not perfect, but good. And that within that, the amenity package of expanding the trail and putting in a bridge connection that was on your trail master plan and everything else that was included was also good. A couple of things have gone on since we met. The last one, the elephant in the room was, is this a for sale or for rent product? Our answer was we had planned on renting the entire project, and we heard that's not good. So took that feedback and said, okay, where are we at? A couple of things have happened. There's some conversations that we've had relating to the open space area and improving that in a transaction with kind of a three-way trade. We're gonna come back when we've got some more information relating to that in your next work session and talk about what that means. We're still trying to make sure we understand the staff's perspective and where the impacts of that might or might not be. And we want to make sure we've completely vetted that and gotten all the impact from everybody before we come and dive into that. So our hope tonight was really to dive into the issue related to the for rent, for sale component of this project.
The hardest part.
Well, why not tackle the fun one first, right? And so with that, I'll just dive right in. We've had conversations with many of you about that. And the reality, as we've looked at that, is a couple of pieces. One, the package that we presented to you is based on a full rent scenario in my world. And that matters to me simply because as we have underwritten what we were planning on doing, we've included higher level of finish and more amenities in the bridge and expansion of the trail. All of that design package included the upgrades under a for rent scenario instead of a for sale park. So I was faced with a little bit of a dilemma because if I go strictly to for rent, I would have to come back and have a conversation with you all about a give and take scenario. And I hate that conversation because we all think things are a little bit more important than other things. And I didn't want to come back and say, well, because we're going this direction, I'm going to have to remove that. That just didn't feel right.
Did you back up? You said the for rent scenario, you would have that problem.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Okay.
In the for sale scenario. Okay. Yes.
Because I was like, well,
stay
perfect.
Corrupted.
We're good then.
No, it's the for sale situation.
Good catch.
And so with that, I take great pride as a partner at DA that if we show a picture, that's what we build. I want you all to know that, you know, at the end of the day, the quality that we talked about and there might be some nuances to the color changes happening because, you know, this or that through the process. But the reality is that I don't ever want to show a project that we say will be of this quality and this style. And then you show up and say, well, Nate, what happened? That's not who we are. So sensitive to that, I didn't want to come back today and say, let's talk about the trade-offs. I wanted to come and just say, here's an idea. And I've talked to many of you about that. And that is that the reality is, if I do these for sale, there will be a component that will be bought and then rented. We see that in our for sale projects up and down the valley. The result of that is that as they are sold and rented, they're done as one-off properties, and the tenants that go there are regulated by the ownership, the individual ownership of that. And the community as a whole
suffers from that?
Has a little bit of a different flavor in the long run than a community that's 100% rented and managed in the overall span. Now, saying that, I don't say that without recognizing the real concern that I heard loud and clear of, we would like to see more for sale product in South Jordan. I understand that. So what we would like to discuss with you all as a whole is a compromise. And that is taking, I want to get right to 50%. I'm really close. My underwriting says that I need to be at 100 units to do a for rent community. And we're a few units off of that if we went to a 50-50. But somewhere right in that mix of doing some for sale and some for rent. The for rent justified under the acknowledgement that if we do them as all for sale, there will be a fair number of these that will be for rent anyway. So let's keep the project as proposed. Highest level of improvements, highest level of standard. Put all the promises and make them happen. And then take the for sale component and deed restrict them in such a way that there's a overall HOA management that does not allow those to be rented. And they're inspected and they're obligated to be owner-occupied units so that we know that those people who own the properties will live there. We'll manage it as a whole so that it becomes to the quality of in 10 years, 20 years down the road, it remains as we've built it and designed it and how we operate it. That would give us the middle ground to, I think, both win. We would provide the for sale product that you're looking for. We would be able to underwrite it with the for rent component that we have used to come up with the assumptions we presented to you. And we get the community designed and built and done the way that you all said you liked. I know that's not perfect. I know that doesn't give us each what we want, but we've really enjoyed our relationship with South Jordan over the years. I can't tell you how much we enjoy working with you in your city. It is a pleasure. And so I hope that conversation is met with, we're not here to walk away. We're not here to make demands. We're here to work with you. And with that process, I think we end up with a much better product overall. And we hope that, you know, a compromise position where neither of us get exactly everything we want, but we can make it work, ends up with something that would be something you all can live with and we can live with. And I hope to make it even better with another conversation in a couple of weeks. But with that on the table, that's kind of where I'm at. And I'd be open to your feedback. And
so legally, you can do that. You can,
yes.
You can limit people from renting their property.
And the difference between having it enforced by you as a city and us as a private HOA is that it would be enforced, right? When people bought those units, they would have full disclosure. You cannot rent this unit. They would sign several documents acknowledging that they will be the owner of record in their unit, and that when they sell it, their buyers have to do the same. And then they would be subject to inspections and through the HOA process, you know, that would be maintained. Not dissimilar to some of the other components that we put in our HOA documents when they're rentals, which is stuff like you can't fill your garage with storage. We count that as a parking space, and so you have to keep your garage available for a car. So through that inspection process that our rental communities go through, the owner-occupied side would go through and they would have to verify, yeah, Jim or whoever, you know, you're owner of record, nice to meet you, thanks for, you know, being a part of our community, and we'll verify that you're not here renting, kind of a thing. Let's inspect your garage and make sure you kept your parking spaces open so we can, you know, have the visitor parking set aside for the visitors, that kind of conversation, hopefully done in a friendly way.
I'm curious, what other, that's a great concept. What other projects have you done like that? Have you done any other projects like this?
We have.
Okay, so you've managed the owner-occupied piece. How many years into it are you? If you'd give us just an overview.
Yeah, let's see. Our Harriman property is the one we've done that, and that is 3 years old now. There's a common clubhouse and pool where in that project we built an amenity, and so you have some that are owner and live there and some that are renters, and it's actually gone great. You don't know when you show up to the clubhouse and you talk to people, there's not a big red R on somebody's chest or you know, O on somebody's chest. Everybody just lives there and it's kind of a non-issue.
And so then when the title is transferred, you hold that same person accountable in perpetuity.
In perpetuity.
Okay.
So in essence, it's a deed restriction that's been on it.
And the key on that is making sure people understand up front what they're doing, right? I mean, we've all heard of experiences where somebody, you know, may buy something and not understand what they're buying. Okay. Where we would be involved in the long run, it would be super important to me to make sure that each individual knew and understood, yeah, I'm buying this because I'm going to live here. And when I sell it, whoever I sell it to needs to live here.
And you will also disclose that part of it is a rental.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I do agree with your point about the quality of like an overall management company rather than one-off short-term rentals. Like, hey, I buy it and I'm renting it to a bunch of guys that go skiing every winter and then somebody else switches in and whatever.
Yeah.
So with the renter piece, so you're proposing a 50-50.
Yeah, I guess I'm proposing 100 units. And then we talked about 186 total. And if you twist my arm tonight and tell me we can do it, but we have to go to 50-50, then I'm going to look at you and say, I'd really like to get to 100, but if that's the deal, then that's the deal. Fair enough? Yeah. My underwriting is just to have an on-site maintenance person and to have an on-site leasing agent and have that quality of under... It just... That break even for me is at 100. So my policy, my partners have asked for me to sit here and tell you we're at 100.
I appreciate that.
But we're also here to work with you.
Right, right. I appreciate it. I mean, fair enough. You've probably called all of us, and I just want you to know I appreciate how we have a lot of developers come and talk to us. And there's a tone, and there's a posture, and there's a respect. And so thank you for not being a bulldog and trying to demand, but partnering with us. So yeah. I just want to personally say thank you. You know, I would like 100% owner occupied.
You've made that very clear.
But I understand none of us get everything we want, of course, and it's got a pencil.
Yeah.
I appreciate your posture and your tone, and I just wanted you to know that I think best decisions are made as we have discussions in respect. So thank you.
Anybody have any thoughts for Nate? Anybody have any thoughts to share with Nate? Any feedback?
I like the deed restricted idea and that you would enforce it. Because I just don't think we're really have the capacity to do that.
No, and to be honest, it puts you in a really awkward position because there are a lot of South Jordan residents who rent. And if you have to do it on one, as a city, you'd have to look at that entire situation, and we're not asking you to do that. We wouldn't want to do that. This would be a very specific one-off by development agreement under contract, requirement of us to manage this in a way that would put that obligation entirely on us, but give you the assurances that I'm sure our smart attorneys can draft that it would be done the right way.
And we've done affordable deed restricted before.
Yeah.
And one thing I like about it is people can choose up front. If they go, I don't know, I only wanted to live here for a year or two and then I was hoping to rent it out and buy something else. You're welcome to do that anywhere else. But that's not what this development is. And people can decide for themselves. They either want to be owner-occupied or not, you know, if this is where they want to buy. It's nobody makes anybody do anything. You can choose that. And if you choose that, then you know what you're choosing.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Well, and you may get some transitional that they start off as renters and then decide to purchase later.
True. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you envision that eventually over time you might choose to sell more units and then convert them? Or do you think this is a long-term situation?
The answer to that is no, it would have to be long-term.
Yeah.
Because of the way we're setting this up to be co-managed, if you will, that we couldn't just one-off sell some of our rentals. It would really need to be set up, especially because I know where we're at in the rental component of this community in making sure that we deliver the highest level of that expectation for the management side and the ongoing maintenance of everything, that if we broke off any more of those, we would put those additional renters at serious risk of not having that level. So to honestly answer your question, which I understand is a concern of, you know, maybe in the future we could end up with more for sale, which I want to say yes to, the answer has to be no. We would have to long-term understand that this is the rental component of this community and it is what it is.
I have a question. If the HOA manages things and you'll have an on-site maintenance person, whatever, that will, which is understandable, right?
Mm-hmm.
That I say whatever only to mean, you know, what you would expect, right? To have somebody on-site to help with management, things like that. If the water heater goes out in a rental unit, you guys are going to take care of it. If a water heater goes out in a owner-occupied, that's on them.
Correct. The difference would be the maintenance would be done interior and exterior for the rentals, exterior for the for sale. So the yards and everything else would be maintained by the one guy.
Like your typical condominium project.
Like yes.
That's what I expected you would say, but thought it was good to make sure we
Did. You know, the inside of the walls would be yours, right?
It's the exterior shell and the landscaping would be part of the HOA.
Yes.
So are you going to consider these condos or townhomes?
We're probably townhomes.
They'd be townhomes.
Okay.
Yeah, we wouldn't condominiumize them. They would be wall-to-wall.
I have a question that's come to mind. Because I'm not saying I think this is what you'll do, but I am asking because we have had experience with this, in places. Do you plan to keep ownership of this for a long time, or is this the kind of thing that you might sell off in a couple of years the entire development?
Sure. The answer is our intent is to hold these long term. I'm putting my personal family money in this, and the intent is that the reason we're doing these is for a long term asset to have. I would want to make sure for both of us that if for whatever reason it did get sold off, that it wouldn't matter at that point whether it was me or another party, that it would all, the expectations and the contract with the city would be staying the same. But the intent is no. We have about 2,500 of these rental townhome units, and I sold one of those, and I did that up front, and I told everybody we're doing this one as a for sale. We build them differently. The higher level of standard that we're talking about, the underwriting for that financially, I mean, I know in your world it doesn't necessarily equate to my profitability, I get that, but it does mean that because I'm intending them to hold them long term, I'm spending more money on them up front so they'll last. So I'm less incentivized to sell them quickly.
Okay, no, that's a fair answer. Appreciate that.
But even if he did sell them, because we're doing an agreement, everything would transfer anyways to the new owner to have to meet those same requirements.
Ideally. I just wanted to hear it and see.
I would 100% expect that to be there.
Go.
Yeah.
As planned.
Yeah.
And the last thing I would want is just, which is why I just think it's important to hear.
Yeah.
You know, what you're
please,
planning.
This is why
the
I'm here. Give me
the
hard stuff. We'll try and tackle
to be
it.
In 2 years, surprised with it, right? With a surprise ring.
Yeah.
It's shit on
scares.
Yeah. So thank you.
Yeah.
A question on the Harriman project you did. What percentage of that was owner occupied and rental?
60-40.
60?
60% rental, 40%
okay.
owner occupied.
And that's what it's helping your brain bring back, but just reversed.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. That one is a bigger project. That one has 278 units in it.
And
so.
And what are your owner-occupied going to sell for? This is obviously not going to be affordable housing.
It's not. On this one, I would expect these to start north of, Hunter, do we know?
Yeah, 525 to 570 was what the appraisals came in at.
How many bedrooms?
It's
three and four bed.
Okay. So, I mean, we're not filling that need, but we are still filling the need of people needing housing units. And
there's that balance.
525 to 575 is better than 625, right? So, and I'm sure you don't.
And you know, because you're in the industry, that if I can sell it for 625, I will.
I know you will.
So I'm not committing that that's the minimum price we're selling for. I'm just telling you that. That's where the appraisal came at, to be fair.
Mm-hmm.
If the market would support a 625 price, then I'm motivated to sell it for as much as I can.
Yeah, it's business, I get it.
Isn't that crazy? We're selling
so crazy
a townhome, a three-bedroom townhome for over
$500,000. That's $500,000 used to mean a lot.
Yeah.
It used to.
Yeah.
I get it. We're anxiously engaged in the affordable component of our market. We've been working on some really cool stuff that won't fit in this place and this location, but it is really fun to try and figure this out. The product we've come up with is a detached unit. It's 30 feet wide. The foundation is poured as a townhome. So our approach is to build the foundation, get the economies of the townhome component, and then have each unit stand as a separate standalone structure.
In this project?
No. This is a different project. We're modeling it kind of after the Sugar House bungalow, where it's got a detached garage that may or may not be constructed today. It has three bedrooms built now, and we will pour the back pad as a patio for an additional add-on that you can do if you choose with a complete package that you could pick up at a lumber yard and build it, kind of do it yourself, or hire a contractor to come do it and add on to it later. So you can get that economy of scale later with, but you've got the necessary pieces built in up front. It's kind of an interesting concept.
That's
I don't
cool.
know if it's going to work or not,
cool.
but
are you doing a basement
step.
Underneath
yeah.
the patio?
We're not finishing the basement. We're just putting in the basement and then designing. That's so cool. ultimately, it can be, you know, it can be up to like a five-bedroom house, but you're buying like 2.5 beds now, 3 bedrooms now, and you're building a garage. It struck me because you look and you say, okay, how much of our population is a for rent living in an apartment? And they're at that stage of their life, that's what they can afford, or that's where they're able to be. And they're in a carport and they're okay with it. But if we could get them into a house, they'd take it. Why not give them the option to maybe have a carport that they can build a garage later on? I mean, if I had the choice between apartment rental versus home ownership, maybe I would take it. So it's all based on reality and trying to figure that out. I think our first project is going to come out in Eagle Mountain next year. I'll keep you posted.
Cool. Yeah,
it may be a complete flop,
yeah.
and you'll be really glad that you didn't have anything to do with it. But we're trying. And if it works, then I would love to find a way to come bring a style of that to South Jordan. Mm-hmm. Because it is a need. We need to figure it out.
Yeah, it is. And we want people to owner-occupy because it's their future. And I know you're in it for, this is business and you need to make money, but we really need to look at the future of how many people would be better off in 10 years if they own rather than rent. And that's my big thing.
I'm not, I get it.
Right, right.
It's this balance of the market and what, you know, is supported today and balancing that with long-term, I understand.
Yeah.
That's why I feel like our hope is that this compromise of split the baby in the middle would work for you, because we do really like this project, and I do think it would be ultimately something that we would all be really proud of when it's done. I think it would be a huge benefit. It doesn't meet everything that we want, but it gets us all a lot better, I think, than not doing anything.
So I think Nate needs to get feedback to know whether or not to, you know, keep moving. They're doing a lot of work on this and spending money working on it.
One more question.
Go ahead.
What was the initial ratio that you brought to us last time when you came?
186 for rent.
Okay. And then when you called me, what was your proposal at that point?
I think we've said 100 rent and 86 for sale, and we've heard through that conversation, yeah, but if you could get to 50-50, that'd be a lot better. And the pushback from my partners has been, hold the line at 100, we really need to get there to underwrite it.
So what's that ratio of 100 to 86? Is that a 60-40?
It's about a 60-40.
That's okay.
But I'm here to tell you, we want to work with you.
We're talking the difference of 10 homes.
Right,
yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'll go ahead and start. So and by the way, it's been a pleasure, you know, working with you guys. You guys have been great. As far as direction, you know, for me, you know, I could get okay with the 50-50. And part of it, you know, I'd like to get to the 50-50 number. You know, I kind of look at the big picture too, and we gave you all, you know, all the rentals over there in River Park area and stuff like that. So, you know, understanding that we've been generous with, you know, with your company, and understanding that, you know, that those offices there, they needed that, you know, and I get that. So, but, you know, I'm interested, you know, in all the details as we move forward, but just at least direction on that part of it. But I'm also very hopeful that the whole outside part of it, all the amenities and all the things that as you're working, you said you're going to work with staff to figure those things out.
Yeah.
You know, for me, for me to get to 50-50, I was like, I want that to be remarkable. You know, and so I was like, hey, that we have, you know, that looks fantastic. We have great amenities. And there, and that's if that's the case, then I could potentially get okay with the 50-50.
I appreciate your feedback.
Yep.
Basically the same as Patrick. I'm still struggling with going to the 50-50, but yeah, I guess if everything else, blows me away.
I'm also struggling to get to the 50-50. Fair enough. I appreciate your feedback.
Now I'm paying you 20.
I love it.
I appreciate what Council Member Harris said, is, and we talked about this on the phone. We did hand over an entire project and said, go for it, rental only. And I said on the phone, I hope we don't regret that. We've never done that before. I don't think in my history on the council have we said, let's do an entire development of rental product.
And we were pretty far down the road before we knew that's what they were supposed to be.
Right.
We didn't know that until we were pretty far down.
I hope you know, Mayor, and I really appreciate that. We didn't ever intentionally hide that. We felt like we had communicated that. We clearly did not. I own that. We should have walked through the door with a big, this is a for rent sign.
Yeah.
So I appreciate where that got us, and I appreciate you all working with us. You know, I get it.
Yeah. We're close to the 50-50. I, of course, would love more for owner-occupied.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you're close. I would love you to go back and come back with a better ratio. I agree with Mr. Harris and Mr. McGuire. Overarching, I don't want this to be something where you can't support the quality, because we've all seen projects that kind of turn ghetto in 5 years.
Right.
Because the HOA is not doing their job. And so I understand, and you're right, and I get that that's an investment. I would like you to just see if you can squeeze in some more owner-occupied.
Okay.
So,
okay. I appreciate the feedback.
Before I get both of your feedback, I'm going to toss out there to add to feedback to here as well. If 100 is the threshold that they have to be at for rentals to get to 50-50, would you like to see them add 14 more units? It takes the overall unit count up, or is that not what you'd like to see? I just need to know.
I like the layout of how it is now. I mean, I think we've had a lot of conversations, and to kind of get it to where it's ideal. I don't know if I'd want to change that up.
Okay, no. Just asking.
Yeah. And my feedback to that, and I really appreciate that, is I wouldn't want to do it.
Okay.
I would rather just do more for sale because of the energy that's gone into making sure this is the right layout. I think we would be compromising the overall project by trying to cram a few more in, and I'd rather not do that.
Okay.
But I do appreciate
that as
a discussion.
Well, like, you know, is that
very valid point.
Both parties can agree, don't add more.
Right.
How's that?
That's good. That's good. What are your thoughts?
I'm okay with the 50-50 with the deed restriction and the quality of the product mix.
What are your thoughts?
No, I am assuming we'll have a development agreement with them to make sure the 50-50 remains in place. But I wouldn't be comfortable with anything less.
Everybody keeps using that 50-50 number.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Tanner, you're going to have to back me up on this.
Well, it was 100. Zero.
All right. Fair enough. Thank you. I appreciate your feedback. We'll.
It's 7 units.
I know.
Right. The difference is 7 units. And I'm just going to put that out there for everybody to think about. The difference is 7 units. Are we firm on the 7 units? Are we like, make it 5? Are we like, okay, let's split that, make it 3 or 4?
70-30. Can I do this? If we're on board with the concept, let me go back and sharpen my pencil, really look at what the impact of 7 units is. Surprising, you know, it's not unlike selling something by the foot. When you talk about a $420 a square foot price versus a $425, it sounds like 5 cents, but when you look at maybe if you're buying 30 acres, that can be a big deal.
Right.
Let me, if it's okay, Mayor.
If you're
willing to do that. Sounds like
we're
going in the right direction. Let me sharpen my pencil and see what we can get to without compromising the long-term and quality. Because I don't have the full impact yet of what 7 units means. If I didn't get to that, I wanted to make sure we all talked as a group and that we're going in the right direction before we really dived in. So if that's where we are, if it's okay, let me sharpen my pencil.
Yeah, for sure. The council likes the project. We like the project, and it sounds like everybody's supportive of the project. If
you guys are great.
Look at that.
I wish I could do 10 more projects in your city. And I am trying to. And I am trying to find an answer to the affordability question.
Good.
That's
a worthy
cause. That process of building those units, the key to that is, one of my biggest costs in building a property out is a house or a townhome are my fees. And so because I've been connecting those units as one, the city that I'm working with is counting those as townhomes. So the fees, the city's participating because they're now running it as a townhome, because technically they're all connected with their foundations, which is kind of an interesting idea, as you as a city might be looking at some answers there, is that when I'm building a 30-foot wide house as a house, I get to process that as a townhome. And that really helps my ability to sell that at a different price. Just an idea.
Good feedback.
Sure, appreciate your help.
Thanks, Nate.
We look forward to talking to you soon.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll get out of your hair.
Because next we're going to talk about the residential chickens floating zone. So we're going to turn it to Stephen Schaefermeyer. And I know, right? There is no other way to transition that. It just is what it is. So
I'll be the residential chicken floating zone, or collecting zone, or something like that.
Heard about chickens floating and. Anyway.
And there may or may not have been, we all know Dustin well enough to know how his mind works. Just take note of what you're having to think for dinner. And that was not an accident. He's like, yeah, let's just stay with the themes. Yeah. Okay. Please, take it away.
So I was asked to talk to you about the residential chickens floating zone. This is not a proposal by staff to change anything in the code. It is, there is currently an issue about chickens in a neighborhood, and the question arose is what is the council's feeling about potentially expanding what zones chickens are available in? So I've provided you the entire ordinance. A floating zone floats above, and if your lot qualifies and you're interested, it magically descends on your lot and you can do whatever the floating zone tells you you can do.
That is the best definition in seven years.
Just it kind of floats above until you want to use it and you can show the city that you qualify. So it's different than like the ADU ordinance, right? Which applies equally. There are some requirements in the ADU ordinance that you have to meet. But in terms of the majority, if not all lots within a zone where you can do an ADU, meet it. This one's a little different. It applies to all residential zones. So it applies to our least dense residential single family zone, to our most dense residential single family zone, which is R5. And you have to have within that at least a 10,000 square foot lot. It does not apply to residential multiple family zones. Now there are some primarily west of Bangor Highway near South Jordan Parkway, and east of course of Daybreak, there are some single family neighborhoods with a variety of lot sizes that are zoned residential multiple. The reason for that was, an agreement back in the day when that whole area, Ochre Park, that whole area developed. And part of the reason they got the residential multiple designation was to provide more flexibility throughout the entire development area. So some of the homes within a residential multiple zone in that area are 10,000 square feet. Most of them are not. So if a change like this were to occur, then it would apply equally to the single family residential zones as it does to a residential multiple family zone. You'll notice that this also applies to the PC zone where Daybreak is located. So it
so
applies.
So Tamar could get chickens, this is what you're saying.
As long as
she's not big enough. Probably
actually,
can't
I think it is.
As long as she has 10,000 square feet and can meet the other requirements of the zone, she can have chickens. And so,
not that I was advocating, but
it's hard to compare the RM zones to the PC zone. They're pretty different. But the thing that you can compare is that the PC zone has plenty of lots that are 10,000 square feet, as fewer of those in the RM zone, but there's a lot of lots that, that wouldn't qualify. So the argument for a change like this would be, because it applies in the PC zone, why wouldn't it apply to RM zones if you meet the requirements? The argument against is you're allowing one or two lots in a neighborhood where the majority of people would not be allowed to have chickens. Usually we don't get complaints about chickens until somebody has a rooster. And then we get complaints about chickens.
Which is why we're actually having this conversation today.
Yes. Any complaint about chickens that I've been involved in the city has involved a rooster.
Yeah. The accidental purchase of a rooster.
And usually it's accidental, not always.
Yeah. I was wondering. Okay.
Right.
Like, why would you buy a rooster? It's because you thought it was a chicken.
Well, because they're this big.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you don't know.
And the sex is not, you know, all that.
I would easily.
It's not the parents.
Yeah.
Okay. You have chickens, Kathy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
So the ADU changes are similar in that we expanded who could have a detached ADU. They're different in that we only expanded it to zones that are already allowed an ADU. That everybody in there is already allowed an internal ADU. They just get to choose between an external and an internal if they meet certain requirements. This is different in that if expanded to the RM zones, we would be expanding it to fewer lots in neighborhoods where likely the majority of people would not be allowed residential chickens, unless you want to change other things in the residential chicken floating zone. So I don't know if that's enough of a background to get a little direction. Like I said, the direction I'm looking for is if this is something you want staff to pursue, then we will. If it's not, we won't.
So, go ahead.
You go.
Okay. I was just going to say part of the reason I wanted to have a discussion about it is I just feel like the underlining zone, does it really make a difference when you're just looking, if you're still holding the mandatory lot size and the setbacks, should it really matter what your zone is? That's kind of the approach why I thought we should have a discussion about it. Go.
And chickens aren't any more annoying than somebody's barking dog.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't hear, yeah.
They cluck when they lay, but usually it's not in the middle of the night. Never.
Yeah,
exactly. You do hear accusations that chickens attract rodents in a way that maybe a dog doesn't, but I'm not going to go there because I'm not a chicken expert.
I haven't heard complaints. So anyways, those were my thoughts as to why I'd like us to discuss them.
What are your thoughts?
I'm fine.
Yeah, I'm fine with it.
What are your thoughts?
So if I wanted to have a chicken coop and I'm a base, no, I'm not proposing, but
sure.
Do I come to the city or can I just go, mm-hmm. here's the ordinance and I will therefore put in a chicken
coop? You have to get it
approved. There's a permit.
Okay.
Yep.
So if somebody has chickens with no permit, then what's our process?
So usually that would, I'll tell you the scenario, right? We get a call because of a rooster. We send out code enforcement. They either say you're in a zone where you're not allowed chickens, or you have a lot that's not big enough to have chickens, or you meet both the zone and the lot requirements, please apply for a permit. And so they would apply for a permit and we would go through it and decide whether they meet these requirements or not. And if they need to make changes to their property, if they have too many chickens, then that's the process that we would go through that. But usually that is a code enforcement case. Much like ADUs, it's weird that I'm comparing ADUs and chickens. ADUs are just on the mind and now chickens are. But we know there's a lot of people out there who have chickens who didn't get a permit or are probably on lots that are too small or in zones that it's not allowed. Mm-hmm. So,
but if there's no complaints,
We're not peeking in people's backyards.
Exactly. The minute we start peeking in backyards or even looking at front yards, the Title 17, the planning code, I bet you all of you have violations on your lot in some way or another if I looked hard enough. Yeah.
Hey, that's true about my driving.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
So if this says that you can have a max of 6 chickens, is that across the board in our city? Like nobody's allowed more than 6 chickens?
Unless you're in the
farm zone.
Yeah, the farm zone, which is the R1A and A5 zones. We're dealing with a pig right now on a lot like that. So,
see, people think South Jordan.
I can't make this
only
up.
Suburban and urbanish suburban. Yeah. We still have a chicken situation, and we still are talking about pigs. It hasn't completely gone away. You know, it still exists.
Now, is
so
it the
pigs
problem,
and the
R1A, or is it the homeowner's problem?
Yeah.
I mean, which one was your first? Probably the pig.
Okay. Yeah. So let me just to be clear. If somebody has a lot that's not 10,000 and they have chickens, we're not in the business of running them down, but they wouldn't be able to get a permit if they came to the city and asked for a permit. You'd look at their lot size and say, I'm so sorry, you're short.
Right. And then usually the response is, well, I have a neighbor down the street that has chickens.
Right.
And we'd say, well, you're welcome to submit a code complaint if you want to rat out your neighbor.
Yeah, yeah. And then the code complaint, like how hard do we come down on people? Are we just saying, hey, you're out of compliance? Or are we going in and like being really hard on them? I mean.
Well, I don't do the code enforcement. Like I'm not there on site.
Yeah.
So that's our code enforcement officers. I'm sure they've been accused of being hard. But what we do is we enforce the rule. Once we know of a violation, we take it through the process. Most people are willing to come into compliance. Those that aren't, we do
our
best.
We prosecute,
yes.
My office and handles a number of complaints.
Okay, so that is our
yeah,
process.
That's going so far.
Very few actually get there because our code officers and Brad's department, his group, do a phenomenal job at working with them. But if somebody says, I'm going to have chickens on my townhome backyard, eventually they'll go see somebody to take them.
Okay.
And usually how it
works.
We have an animal wall of fame in this city. Eventually I'm gonna choose a wall and put up animals. I just distracted myself from the comment I was gonna make. So sorry.
Wall of fame. Biggest
animals.
Okay.
We don't prosecute very many people.
Yes, thank you. Back to prosecution. What usually happens is code enforcement gives as many opportunities for them to apply and to come into compliance. Sometimes that causes problems with the person that's complaining because they expect that code will go out there and the next day it will be resolved. But sometimes these things can drag on because of those opportunities to come into compliance. And partially so that if we have to go to prosecution, we can show the judge, code enforcement, planning, whatever department is involved, gave them multiple opportunities and they chose to ignore us.
What are your thoughts?
I say we go with the 10,000 foot lot and don't worry about the zone.
What are your thoughts?
Well, you know. I'm already converted.
Okay. How's our 10,000 foot lot compared to other cities? Is this pretty much what people are doing?
I don't know. I'd have to look into that. My guess is, and you can see how old this ordinance is. So there's a 2012.
It was back when I was on the council before that we allowed them.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure at that time there was a comparison.
Mm-hmm.
10,000 is also... a lot size that's connected to specific zones, and so it probably makes sense based on the minimum lot sizes.
So do we currently have some residents that are like advocating for this? Is there some people that are waiting
not
for this?
To me.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'm comfortable with it.
Okay, I think we're okay with it.
Okay. Thank you.
Do they count as an ADU, the chicken coop?
No.
That would be useful.
That's when I walk away.
Okay. So this is an aside. It's kind of down a little rabbit hole, but I have a little 5-year-old grandson who has chickens. They don't live in Utah, and they have a big acre and a quarter of land, and they have this chicken coop, and they have these 5 chickens, and his favorite chicken was named Mrs. Clucky till Mrs. Clucky turned out to be a rooster, and they... anyway, yeah, it was Mrs. Clucky until a fox ate him, and it was real, and that really happened, and it was devastating for this little grandson of mine. And chickens are a real thing, but he also, his favorite thing to do is chicken chores every morning. He goes to gather the eggs. He loves that, and it's a good thing for kids too. And I don't think it's a bad thing for kids in South Jordan either, if they get a chance to do that, you know?
And I find if people share their eggs, usually
the neighbors are
more
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Creates harmony.
So, yeah, thank you. Right. Thank you. We've been wondering how
to do
it.
There's a little
dim for
energy
conservation mode.
Knowing me, I put you all to sleep. So.
Jason said, I think we're just trying to cut back.
Trying to stretch the budget to the end of the year.
Yeah.
And then leave it to Ryan.
We're only going to make it to the 29th. Yeah.
You know what? If
Brian will work from home.
If the lights are killing Dustin's budget, there's bigger problems. And they'll fix that.
Yeah. All right. Mr. Luce, we are going to talk about our municipal justice court.
And just so you know, we generally, on the prosecution side, give people right up to barbecue season to get their chickens in order.
But there's no slaughtering on site.
I did what I never do. I have PowerPoint.
Someone bring me my pillow.
Yeah. Well, I turned on the light for you.
Do you need some caffeine?
What do you think's in there?
Yeah.
I saw his name on the agenda. I'm like, no water tonight.
Are you logged in by chance?
I'm looking at my
screen.
Because
I can share your screen.
Yeah, I'm looking at my screen. Oh, I'm not logged into Zoom. Do you want me to do that?
Let's see what we can do.
I can. Oh, maybe I can.
Maybe we got you. No.
Definitely not.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Is it a bad connection? Because it flashed for a minute.
No patience. There we go.
There we go.
That worked?
Yeah. So you
got fancy.
I have to give all credit, other than the typos that are mine, to Katie over here.
Oh, Katie.
Because I just took what you've already seen. We haven't run new numbers because nothing really has changed. We have some 2023 numbers that we could put in, but the same progression, the same thing. And so instead of spending a lot of time and resources on that, because as our first slide shows, we're looking at how we are putting our resources together. That's the whole point of priority-based budgeting. And I can get you a printout of all this and stuff, but basically strategic priorities, the court isn't mandated. We don't have to have it. It's optional. It doesn't really align us with any of the strategic priorities of the city. Decreasing revenues, increasing subsidy. We're somewhere around $500,000 in subsidy, meaning the general fund, the city's paying that because the court revenues don't get that. The city really has done a lot to cut those. The bailiff, all those different things, the prosecutor. And the prosecutor doesn't really count toward the court, neither does the public defenders, because we're going to have to do that anyway. Yeah. But our staffing and everything in the court, including the bailiffs, we've done a good job there at being as efficient as possible. The court runs really well on efficiency and stuff. We've just seen a change in decline of caseload, and the caseload that's declining are the easy cases. The harder cases that take more time are still there. Domestics have changed a little bit with the recent change in state law where we only try them once. So generally we move those to the district, but we start them in justice. DUIs, those things are still there, but the traffic has fallen off a lot of the code because we work really hard not to actually prosecute our residents on code. And then the two things that weigh the most to me are we're $500,000 in the red roughly, and 3.5 out of every 10 are residents. So that's roughly $150,000 of that $500,000 is for our residents. The other $350,000, if I'm doing lawyer math in my head correct, are for non-residents. And so how much are we inconveniencing our residents, those 3.5, 3.6 out of 10, to drive to what would be the County Justice Court on 21st South, or more likely in the next year or two, because the county's planning on closing their court, the West Jordan District Court there on, 78th and Redwood? Mm-hmm. 78, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not 72. It'd be a little more inconvenient for our prosecutors to drive to the court outside the city, a little more inconvenient for our officers, But it's nothing that shifts this analysis that from the priority-based budgeting and the stepping in Don and Katie's world here, but nothing that would shift it to say, no, we should keep it based on those factors. There's your caseload, dropped from just under 8,000 in 2012 to just under 4,000 in 2022. Just what happened in case? During that same time in 2012, our population went, I can send this to you, Tamara.
Okay.
But our population went, let's see.
Doubled.
In 2006, when I got here, it was 35,000. So 2012, you're probably thinking around 50,000-ish.
Yeah, we've about doubled essentially.
2022, you're in the mid high 80s, right? So your population's going up. How many lane miles do you think we added between them just there, Jason?
Probably,
you know, 40%. Think of all the lane miles you've added and everything else, but yet you still see this decline in cases.
You said what cases were dropping off earlier. Would you remind me of that?
We're dropping off a lot of our traffic. Did we ever make a slide on that?
But it's just traffic that's climbing. Everything else has stayed
more or less. I would say our time spent doing other calls, the type of calls has been more significant. And so even as we add officers and stuff, I mean, on a domestic, how many officers do you need on one domestic call?
Minimum two,
possibly more. And how long does a domestic call take you?
2 to 3 hours.
At least an hour.
Probably.
At least an hour or two.
Yeah.
So if you think about that, whereas, you know, back 100 years ago when I started here, you could have those same two cops writing in that hour 2 to 3 tickets at least each. And it just shift in our in what they're doing and how much time they have to spend doing it, right? And so here's your subsidization year on year from 16 through 22. And this, I didn't really like this slide. This is the potential savings. So you see in that first year in 2016, we were about at that break even. And then 17, 18, you see some ups and down, and now you're at the potential savings being that 330,000+.
So this is a projection if we were to move.
These are actuals.
Those are actuals.
Okay.
If we had gotten rid of it,
right.
We
so
would
they
have
are
saved
projections because we're not there. We are still holding.
Well, they're actual.
We're looking in retrospect.
Yes.
But they're actual in that we know we would have saved that. But yes.
In this case, if we switch gears, this is the savings.
That would have been the savings over the last few years. Going forward,
we
estimate, you know, that would climb to a point because salaries and all that goes up. And this is not full costing it, if I remember right. This isn't taking
it. Takes out just the things that we're pretty certain we'd actually lose. There's a few costs that we're like, it's not clear what would happen in either scenario, so we leave those alone.
But this isn't also like the use of that part of the building we could move.
Did you include
the money we're spending now for the annex and moving people, stuff like that? Okay, so this adds that built in.
Okay.
And then this is cases filed. This is kind of where my mind goes, is who are we serving with our justice court, right? The green and the 2022, when we got these numbers, were partway through the year, but the ratio stays the same. You know, the green, and sorry that's so small, I tried to adjust it. It was really hard to adjust. Katie uses lots of fancy programs, none of which do I use. And so
I've just gotten over
playing with it. So you're looking at like roughly 2/3 are not city residents. That's just a steady number. And so really 2/3 of that subsidy, whatever the subsidy is not serving your residents. There's future. This is taken from a recent email by Matt Dixon, the city manager of South Weber City, who is doing, he's on the Justice Court work group for the legislature and stuff. They are still working on it. They've got all these work groups, and their goal is to figure out how to go away from a Justice Court system doing criminal cases, so misdemeanors. So we could keep a justice court, last presentation I saw, full kind of fleshed out, but we'd only have traffic in that case and our own code violations, anything that's not a misdemeanor. And then the only way they could pay for it is to siphon off more of the money from the traffic. And so it wouldn't improve the financial situation. So, you know, I got about as far as I could on slides. That's my whole ability to do it. I said, I think it's what I've shown you, what you've seen a year and a half ago that Katie, that Darian and we brought. The key here is this is a policy decision. This is your policy decision. I'd be remiss, and Darren looked at my duties, if I didn't present to you this decision now, because if by July 1, we don't say what we're doing with the court, if we just let it go, then it runs for another 6 years. We can close it in that, but then we still have obligations to pay at least the judge's costs. And over that 6 years, if in today's dollars, if he didn't move at all, and he would, it'd be about $1.2 million. And so the question is, what do you guys want to do? I don't really have a big opinion one way or another. I can tell you it doesn't meet our regular way of budgeting, but there are a lot of esprit de corps reasons, a lot of feel that this is a good service for our residents. I know the judge has spoken with several of you and has made those arguments, and they're great arguments. But I would, you know, if I were you, I'd be pretty mad at the city attorney if you got 6 months, a year, 2 years from now and said, hey, what about this court? It seems to be an expensive luxury. And I said, well, I didn't think you want to. And so I just let this opportunity go by. So with that, it's kind of your discussion. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Go ahead.
So what do you think the caseload is right now? I mean, as far as what types of cases? On a percentage, if you have a rough estimate. So we're doing some traffic, right?
There's some traffic. Traffic's still probably, I don't know, I haven't been in the court myself.
We haven't
on the numbers.
The actual numbers, so I haven't seen it. So it'll probably be my guess is it looks similar.
My guess is it hasn't changed from when we did it. And so you're probably 50%-ish or so of traffic, and the rest is the rest of the cases. Whereas in 2006, when I started here, you were probably 80-90% traffic.
So we're 50% traffic. And,
yeah, and I can get you those.
Domestic cases do not go to our justice court?
They do. So the state legislature changed the rule on domestic, or changed the process on domestic cases. They don't want victims and witnesses to have to testify twice. And you get an automatic appeal called a de novo appeal from a court of non-record. And so it was putting people in the place where, you know, you'd have a witness testifying in two courts. They said either side can pick, but you only get to do it in one court. And so if the case is tried in the justice court, then it can't be appealed. So typically one or both sides moves it when it's set for trial. So all the pretrials and stuff will be held in justice court. And then when it looks like this is going to go to trial, they'll move it. And so it ends up being in both courts. It'll take up some of the justice court's time, but we're seeing less actual trials in the justice court.
So we have some domestic, and then we have
retail theft, DUI, assaults, some code. You're trespassing. There's a lot of little things. Disturbing the peace. It just depends. So on the traffic, besides speeding, there's reckless driving, there's running stop signs,
DUI.
There's, I said DUI. And the big criminal ones, the ones that take most of my prosecutor's time, they're domestics, the DUIs, the assaults. Those three or four will take most time. And then
wind up in our court. The assault.
Yeah. Yeah, as long as they're B or C. So assault with a deadly weapon would go up. But if it's just like two guys pushing each other and someone throws a punch, then we have that case.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
code also takes, when we get to that point, code surprisingly takes a lot of time just because of the
best of interest. So if we closed our court, all that stuff would go to
Salt Lake County Justice Court on 21st.
And which you said is closing down.
They had talked about taking it to the legislature. So the way the statute works is if there is a county justice court and you close your court, it automatically goes to justice county justice court. They don't get to say yes or no. It just goes there. If there is no county justice court it can be sent to, so if the county closes their court, they have to get permission from the legislature because then it goes to district court and affects the caseload. And so the county had talked about going to the district court, to the legislature this year to go to the district court. They didn't end up doing that. That's why I kind of hurried and got you that resolution so we didn't miss a window. But I sat on that because the county decided to do it next year. So this upcoming legislative session, 2025, I anticipate that the county will ask the legislature. If the legislature says yes, then basically by order of operations and timing, our cases, because they go in 1 year or 2 years, depending on what we ask for and what the court can accommodate, would go to county and probably both set will go to district. And then if you tell me to send it, we'll send the letter. And then I'll coordinate with them and say, hey, county, we're okay holding on to it. I mean, we'd probably be okay taking both years, especially if the county's going to send it over here to district court. In a lot of ways, that's a little easier for our people because instead of running to 21st, they just go to 78th. Okay. So we'd be coordinating it. So you'd still see a court here for a year.
So is the district court actually going to even take a code case?
No, so we are working on getting you the administrative code program. We're changing our ordinance a little. Most cities are going to administrative program and not taking through criminal. You, as we discussed with the people who have a little excess material spilling out of their garage and around, arresting those people is not something that works. And so we're going to find something that works, and we're working on that program. So cold cases.
So we have an alternative for those kinds of...
Yeah, we actually have a code that we can use now. We haven't refined the abatement process and kind of once we get a judgment that works for us, how to now go clear out the stuff and help that resident, you know, move toward compliance. And so we're working on that.
Okay. And the district court will take a speeding violation.
They'll have to. I mean, the county justice court will, and if the legislature says yes, they'll send county cases to district, then the district court will take them.
Okay.
And so you're pretty sure this is going to happen.
County will ask the legislature. They said so in their meeting minutes. We had to fish through their meeting minutes. I'd heard rumors of it through people I know on the AOC and stuff, and they thought it was going to go this year. And so we basically had to pour through meeting minutes, and Charity in my office found it. And they said in the 2025 year they intend to take it because they're seeing similar things with the Justice Court. I would submit that there are very few justice courts that would survive a priority-based budgeting analysis or any close look. Maybe in some cities like Manaway, where it's a small city with a road everybody speeds on, you know, that sort of thing. That changes the dynamic depending on how many tickets they want to write. And then what about every 3 to 5 years they're on the news for writing too many tickets?
Yeah. Well, you remember with the statute change with the status of quotas and all that kind of, that had a huge effect across law enforcement across the state.
Yep. And one of our neighbors up north has recently been drugged through the rounds of, are you still doing quotas and stuff? And it doesn't take long to find those articles if you just type in police quotas Utah. You'll see one of our neighboring cities up north has been, on the news 2 or 3 times in the last 6 months. Yeah, that's the one I'm talking about, up north.
Hey, Ryan, do we know, do all cities in Salt Lake County have a justice court?
I don't believe all do. So part of this is, I know not all do because we've changed definition of city, so now we include like Magna Kearns. They've never had one. They were part of the county.
Draper's barely got one.
Draper's is more recent. Riverton's had one for
Riverton and Harriman like share, don't they?
They share a judge, but they have separate courts. And when I say they share a judge, more precisely, the judge that works for both of them, but they've appointed the judge separately. And so the judge has individual appointments and retention elections in each. Some examples along the Wasatch Front, though, that aren't in Salt Lake County are like Bountiful has never had a justice court, and neither has Layton. They've sent all their cases to district. Same with Spanish Fork. And so, you know, there are a number of cities, even decent-sized city. I mean, Bountiful and Layton have been two of the bigger cities until a lot of us growing cities have passed them for a long time, and they never had a justice court.
Other cities have, they've known we've been studying this through our priority-based budgeting and have reached out to ask what our process is to analyze this, because they are considering doing a similar type of analysis.
A lot of cities are looking at this.
There's several.
Two cities in Salt Lake County, one bigger than us and one that are same size, have both asked me, their city attorneys asked me, you know, how did you get to where you got and stuff, and just told them about the analysis we did. And, you know, some of the judges think this is about them, and you know, that's great if they want to think so. This is about the utility, and especially when you get in a very small area, I mean, people are moving so much, the likelihood you get a ticket in your city, so you need that convenience versus somewhere else, you know, the better odds that you're getting it somewhere else. I mean, every morning, you know, during the school year, I go from Magna to Holiday to South Jordan. You know how many jurisdictions I cross? And I'm probably not atypical. How many jurisdictions an average day do you cross?
Several.
Council members, Adner, you know, and that just happens. Some
sure.
people have luxury, they're staying pretty close to home. But
what about small claims?
Small claims court? The court currently does small claims. The district court has a small claims jurisdiction that can do it, or they can go to the county justice court.
Sure, Judge. Okay. Just, I want to make a clarification. I got a note here that says that Harriman and Riverton do not share a judge. They actually have two different.
Oh, are they two different now? I know they went out to hire at the same time, and for a while they did have the same judge.
There was a lot of conversation. Harriman, Riverton, and Draper have all talked to us about different scenarios over the last number of years about their court, or maybe sharing resources or combining them or just moving theirs to ours or whatever. All these conversations have been happening for a long time. A lot of cities are looking at this budgetary, but our priority-based budgeting really is...
I'm just kind of wondering if all this happens, the district court is going to require a lot
and
more
that's
resources.
That's why we put those last slides up there. The state is looking at doing something along those lines
they're
looking at that.
In September at the Utah League of Cities and Towns, there was a meeting with all the city managers, and the question was asked by the league if there were any cities considering doing away with their justice court. And when they asked the question, it was kind of a straw poll, and a whole bunch of hands went in the air. So many that they changed the question and said, are there any of you not thinking about this? And only a few hands went up, which was indicative to us that many cities are having the same discussion and analysis, because the majority of the city managers said we are considering and we are looking at this issue.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
So kind of back to what Mr. Shelton said, If this is trending and we're kind of at the front of it because we've got better Katie's on our staff and Dantini's who are giving us this budgeting piece, my concern is then, is there going to be an overwhelming burden on the West Jordan District Court? Are we going to, like in 3 years go, I mean, do they have any options of not accepting our cases, or is this going to be a smooth thing?
So like you talked about how the process works.
Uh-huh.
For us to get rid of our court now that we have a county justice court, it just happens.
Okay.
Then the county, in order to move theirs, has to ask legislature permission. And so the county would then ask legislature permission. Let's assume they grant it. And let's assume 4 years down the road after the county's cases, which would include ours at that point, are at the district court. Let's say... Ryan City wants to now do it. We have to go ask the legislature's permission. And that's when they do the analysis, because there's no county justice court anymore.
So,
it would go to the district court. So the legislature would do an analysis and say, can we handle it or not? What are the revenues? And they say yes or no to that.
So we're potentially ahead of others.
Uh-huh. We are ahead of the
scampering to the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, you're getting this question now. The timing worked out that you're getting now because of the judge's terms.
Right.
But it would put you on the wave ahead of the Justice Court
That's
County.
Question. Yes, of Chief Carr, for sure. Chief Carr, do you see any downside to this from where you sit?
I mean, I think it was mentioned that, you know, maybe it includes a little more travel time. There is an element of convenience, you know, with the court here. If there's somebody, if they're working, they can run down to the court, and it's probably a little less time. But I don't think it wins the day as far as keeping a court. And I think the other issue is, look what you've seen over the time since the quota things happened. I mean, the traffic element of that is just dropping off. And there's cities that have even gotten rid of their traffic units, especially when they have the staffing issues. What's the first thing that's going to go? Yeah, are you going to not answer the domestic? Or are you going to stop doing speed enforcement? You're going to stop doing speed enforcement, put those people and maybe in the schools or whatever the situation is. So for us, I don't think it's a major inconvenience.
That was one of the judge's main points, was your convenience.
Yeah, well, sometimes we're inconvenienced by sitting in the court for hours when we're not needed to. So sometimes the scheduling hasn't been very convenient for us. And that should win the day either. I just think, you know, if we're talking about going 106 and Redwood to 78, or it's about 80th and Redwood. It's not that big.
Assuming that happens. If it didn't happen, then you're talking about going down to the Justice Center on 21st, and which is right by where you, when you have to book somebody in jail, you're going down to that general area too.
One other question. If you're saying we're in a $500,000 subsidized situation, that savings of $500,000, how many police officers would that afford us?
Well, let me be clear about one thing. I don't know that we'll get all that $500,000 back, because we have a number of unfilled positions. They're not police.
Yeah.
Grab and stuff, and we have some really great employees who are very invested. Every employee in the court. The judge is a unique case, right, because he's the judge, and it's a totally different process. But our court personnel, court administrator, and court clerks are great people. And I don't want to speak for Dustin, but every conversation has been, do we have positions we can fill with them? And so their salaries of that $500,000, of that $500,000, would just be shifted to other places for spots. I think we've always talked that way.
But again, the reason we have priority-based budgeting is to maximize the use of all of our resources. I have deficits in other areas of the operations that these resources could certainly be a great help to us. And so it's not like we would all of a sudden gain this much revenue, but I could move some resources around to solve other needs.
So to answer your question directly, and with what we could save in the judge's total compensation is a little over $200,000, that would completely be one officer, let's say, with all their equipment and stuff. I can't remember the number. But it'd be 1.5 to 2 that you could do, but for sure one. When you talk public works employees that are a little bit different costs, or some of the other needs around the city, I mean, you would make that decision through the budgeting and what's presented to you next year, or the year in which we discontinued it, and how much the exact savings will be. We know it'd be the judge's total compensation. What more? I mean, it depends on a few different factors. Like being able to use that space instead of rented space now is several thousand a month.
So I guess for me, and it comes down to budgeting, and I love that we're looking at the numbers, not just making an emotional decision. I would want to know that when we say we have this subsidy of $500,000, we're being really intentional about, let's save money, let's try and get this working for us, and not just say, oh, let's find a place for everybody because they're already on the payroll. And let's clear out the annex. Like you said, I love hearing that. Like, let's start using our city property and stop paying rent. I love that. So I would just ask staff to be very mindful of not just plug and play, but if these members of the court are essential.
Those are positions I'd be asking for new people in the next budget.
That's indirect savings because we're not hiring additional three people.
Yeah.
We're just transferring.
That's three requests for FTE.
I hear that. Okay. I just want to make sure that they are positions we need and not just like, yeah. let's carry people over.
And I'll tell you,
yeah, whether this goes away or not, those are three, probably four positions I'm going to be asking for in the fall.
One of those positions would be to assist with grammar requests and a records request. Right now, my paralegal position that started off maybe 10 hours a week doing those. What would you guess she's doing with your office now, 25 to 30?
Cindy's over 30 hours a week right now on grammar requests.
Well, Emily from my office.
Oh, Emily from your office helping us. I'd say...
Who's asking for all this grammar
stuff? We got 20
grammar. I'd say about 10 hours total for us as well.
The last 2 days.
So I bet you have her time.
Adding the subpoenas that you used to be doing too.
Oh, I know.
So she's spending 20 hours at least doing records. I know Chief Carr...
He
I know Chief Carr uses Emily in my office quite a bit.
Emily
also.
Is a godsend to us.
So that is a position that we've been backfilling with other positions. That just means my attorneys, we can't use her as much for her job, paralegal, that we're, she's doing a great job. There's a lot of that going on that we can clear up in the efficiencies. And you know, you've seen the commitment on the part of senior staff here. Good employees stay. And these are really good employees, all of them. Otherwise, they wouldn't be here in the first place. But I can tell you the two I know best over at Intercorders, one little newer that I don't know as well, great employees that if we can find a place in the city for them would benefit the city greatly.
So, Ryan, what type of, I guess, chances are there that the court system, you know, we do away with ours and they end up wherever, then coming back and saying, well, cities now have to pay us, you know, $200,000 a year because of the burden that they're putting on to the court system?
Very low, because they do it all through the fines and forfeitures and fees. That's,
okay.
That's how they've paid for the courts.
That's how they are.
From time immemorial. And that's what they're, as I look at moving stuff around, that's one of the things they're noticing is this traffic idea. I mean, it is possible they say it'll never pay for itself again because there's far less traffic being written, so we need to do this, or they might be able to increase other fees, or they may.
But
find
it's very low
places.
That they would come up with this idea of trying to pass costs back on to the cities.
In your career and a half, Chief, haven't courts always.
I shouldn't have mentioned it. Who knows if he's listening?
I didn't want to mention the years. But in all the years you've been doing it, it's always been paid for by fines and forfeitures. That's the major source of paying for it.
We are seeing
I guess
they are declining in some.
Yeah,
we are now, and that's why the state is a check on anything going into their system.
Yeah. Nervous that the state would come back and say, you put this burden on us, now you owe.
But remember, from the standpoint of the obligation, the state has always had the obligation. The justice courts have always been optional for cities and counties. When we chose to do it, we shifted stuff.
Yeah.
We can choose to undo it the same way.
Yeah.
But ultimately, the obligation for those services is on the state. That's how the state constitution works.
Please, go ahead.
I've got a question. So, appreciate everything you're sharing. There's one thing that on the numbers that... when we show like how much savings we're getting on it and we're factoring in the annex building and how much we'd be saving on rent.
Potentially,
I have a little bit of trouble, because that's included in that number on that slide, right? I have a little
on
bit
the
of
potential
yeah.
savings.
I
wasn't sure it was. That's why I asked.
So the actual average savings is going to be about $171,000 to estimate on average. So it's definitely not that $500,000
that's it. We'd have to update that too, because I know the contract for the bailiff services is
going up. So anyways, I have a little bit of trouble with how we're doing the math on it. And the reason I say that is we could look at any group of employees or any department and say, you know, hey, if we got rid of these people, then we could move the annex people in here and we'd save all this money. And so part of me is just like, it's like I you know, I mean, over time, we're going to grow as a city. We're going to have employees, and I get that. But I have trouble, and I get that we have an immediate thing we could do, and there's a benefit there. I get that. But there's something you could apply that. I could identify all over the city, you know, number of employees. And so I have trouble including that in the number of why we should do it at the court. But just And by the way, I'm saying these things, I just want to bring these things up. I'm not saying I'm opposed to this.
No.
But yeah. But I want to bring a couple things up.
Please.
And that is, you know, I remember, you know, when we had the city council chambers, you know, upstairs. And you know what? We've talked about this before. Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest reasons why we said we needed to move those council chambers was because of the, because we, you know, we needed to be compliant with the court. They needed to have, you know, the judge, I believe he needed to have his own bathroom and a number of other things. And so we needed to go in there and make all these changes. And then we decided, okay, we're going to just build that, you know, that other building. And I'm glad we built the building. It's all being good. But I just look at what originally started that whole process was the court. I mean, that was the main number one reason why we were talking about moving things from what I recall, you know, and
our police had outgrown their space.
I fully believe that the public safety building is a good building, and I'm glad we built it. So I'm not saying we shouldn't have done that. But what I'm, my point is, the thing that kind of started all that was the court. And so and we went through a lot of time in that nice public safety building, which we need. Mm-hmm. We spent, you know, I sunk a decent amount of money in there to have a very nice court there. I mean, the facilities are nice, and they should be. I mean, we want it to be nice, but so there's a lot of expenses that, you know, kind of all came together, and then somewhere along, we're looking at these numbers in here, but we certainly went through a lot of efforts to make all these changes, and it seems, what I recall, it seems to me that the thing that kind of started the process was that court. And so it's far harder to me when I see that court with all that nice building, that investment we have, that we built all that out and how nice it is, just to say, okay, and now we don't need it anymore. And so there's part of me that says, okay, I got to factor that in somehow as well. And I do think when we look at convenience, I mean, like we're talking about putting a new public safety building, public works building, you know, for the West Coast. So our people don't have to drive, you know, so far. Well, I mean, same thing. I mean, we are going to have more people driving to this, you know, especially the police are going to have to drive to the courts. I mean, I think there are some costs. I'm not sure if it's reflected, if we're back at, you know, if that's being reflected in these numbers as well, but.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Come on over here.
Yeah.
Okay.
But for me, when I'm talking this, I'm not opposed to these things.
Oh, I know.
It's not just all pros to shutting the court down. There's some cons here too that I think we fully need to look at.
That's why we wanted to come back to you and make sure you have this policy discussion.
Yeah.
I don't have real preference one way or another. I'm not recommending one to you.
Yeah.
But if you get to next year and the numbers keep going in a way, I'd be derelict not to bring it.
No. I understand even that the cases are coming down and the amount of money we're losing over the years is going up. So we absolutely have to have this discussion and stuff like this.
And we want to give you the most accurate story. What I remember about the public safety and the court discussion is that with the public safety building, which was on a plan anyway, what to do with the court when we remodeled. And you're right, when we looked at remodeling the space here, any changes in the court, we had to comply with all of the court regulations now, which include the bathroom and some things our old court didn't have. We didn't have a great way to put that in. So that pushed that whole conversation and changed a lot of things about this building and that building. So,
well, I don't even the public safety building though, Ryan. I mean, I remember when there was a proposal in that same space to have like a splash pad, you know, type area before, you know, we got plans back that went to the city council about an idea and it was all presented and said, hey, we can have this nice little central area where people can, you know, go out there and play and relax and all this type of thing.
Replace
the fountain. And then that had some serious legs to it.
And then it moved across.
And then it changed. It's like, hey, we actually need a public safety building, which the public safety building, again, was the right thing. And I still fully support it. And I'm glad we built it while things were cheap. And because we had to build these things now, we'd be spending a fortune. So we're very fortunate that we did it when we did it. But
We had a public safety building on the tickler to do, independent of the court.
Gotcha.
But the court was the second we started to look at what would have to happen to court here. Yeah, it went in and it did change things on both. And so maybe sequence of events I remember differently, but you're right. that had to be there. It is a beautiful court, and it's nice facilities. We toured it a couple, a month or two ago, and walked through and looked at the facilities of the court, and it's great office space and a great courtroom.
So. And so because of those things, like it's like as I'm going, it's like, am I for or against it? Like, I'm not like 100% for it because of all these things I just talked about. It's just like, we went through this you know, all those things that kind of went through, the big investment to put it into our new building and stuff like that. It's hard to see all those things and just say, okay, we're gonna walk from that. But at the same time, I also understand the numbers, the cases are coming down. I understand the big picture as well.
And we would still use the courtroom.
Yeah.
We'd still have our code cases through the administrative process. Yeah. We still have different hearings, like we've got one or two variance hearings that have just come up that we're going to have, and so the courtroom can be used for those things. Now, it wouldn't be near as used, the actual courtroom itself, as it is now, but it would still be used frequently.
But as a council member for myself, I mean, I got really behind this whole thing. It was like, hey, because at that point in time, we actually, there were conversations about, hey, you know, if we're going to continue with the court, and the staff's recommendation at that time when things penciled out better was we recommend that we continue with the court because it's good for our residents. There's a convenience there. All those things were discussed and why we should have it now. It penciled then, and I understand it's not penciling now. But I got behind, as a council member, I got behind all that, and I was like, okay, let's go ahead and move forward and do this. And here we are down the road. And I understand the path's changed a little bit. The cases are coming down now. It's costing us money, but just because of all those things, it's not as easy as a decision hey, we're losing some money, so let's just do away with it. So,
no, I agree with you. Yeah. That's why we look at things through the priority-based budget lens, but then we apply. Like, if I did, with all respect, Summerfest probably would pencil on the priority-based budgeting, you know, as an outgo. But there are great reasons to have it. There are great reasons to have a court just the same. That's what you guys need to weigh. And I agree with the building and all that. That was a large part of the whole discussion.
Yeah.
Thank you. We'll have a little bit more discussion. We need to have adequate discussion. We want to make sure we get to the right answer and give Katie some time to show some numbers too. We also only have 10 minutes left in this meeting until we need to start the next meeting. So go ahead and give your feedback, give your input right here. Do you want to go deeper into the numbers? Do you want
to see go deeper Katie into the numbers?
I'm open to you.
Okay, go ahead.
More information, better decisions.
More motivation because of what's happening at the legislature.
Not on my side. I mean, that is a part of it, and I think when you talk to a lot of city managers and stuff, and when I started following the legislation, because those have been in discussion 3 years.
What has changed from what?
No, the numbers have. So 6 years ago, last time the judge sat for retention election, our numbers were different than they are now, and they just you see these trends. And so I'm thinking 6 years from now, 5 years from now, 4 years from now, what would the council want to do with that money? Because you make the decision now in time, four or five, 6 years from now. And in the middle of that, it's really hard to change your course. I mean, you could still close a court, you could still redistribute all the employees, but you're still paying. And you hear me keep going back to, and it's not personal, it's the position, the judge compensation. That is the one number that is specific to the court. All the other numbers aside, like you say, Patrick, if they move them and shift them, or sorry, council member.
You can call me Patrick.
all those other numbers aside, the judge's compensation is that, and that would go back into the general fund. But if you don't, that sits with us in today's money. It's just over 200,000 total compensation times that by six, 1.2 million. That is your locked into. Now, that'll obviously grow. That's why I say today's money, because he gets the same raise all the other employees get. And that's by statute.
That's your commitment.
Yep.
Yeah. Now, if they change the whole system in between, that could change it. And, you know, and I'm just looking at the last 6 years of a trend line of cases dropping, revenues dropping, costs escalating, and I'm saying 6 years from now, what would I think that would be?
Do you have a laser pointer?
Is there one on that clicker?
It could just be Ben on point.
What about the clicker right here?
Right here, Katie on the end.
Oh, that one. Okay.
Katie, sometimes the laser doesn't point to the TV very well.
Yeah, you need to use your finger, my friend.
You need a different laser.
I will say I do not know what the right answer on this is. I really just ran the numbers. So I could show you what the revenue is, but it's a much deeper philosophical question, I think, which is where I've left a lot of it to Ryan.
Well, in that, she said something important there. Is there really a right answer?
Yeah.
There's the correct answer for you as a council at this time, and that's what you're exploring.
Okay. Well, you gave a good example of Summerfest. One of the reasons that we invest in Summerfest is that nobody else is going to do it for us. Nobody else is going to get out there and celebrate South Jordan as a city. So that makes it uniquely South Jordan provided service. Whereas the question with the courts is, could we do it in a regional model? And that's often what we're asking with PUV is, who else could do it? Who can we partner with? How can we to spread our resources the best we can? So there have been other things that were like, well, let's send that to the county. Let's do that with a nonprofit. So that's where this is a little bit more, it's different from Summerfest in a way. But there's your traffic cases. So if you can see that crazy red line is traffic cases from 2012 to 2022. And that is true countywide. It's not just our police department or our staffing levels. It's really just everybody. And then you can see the blue here is your criminal cases that are fairly flat, and then small claims is super flat as well. Did you guys want to know more what goes into the criminal cases? We've talked about it a little bit. I have that one if you want to see that.
Just pull it up real quick.
Can you, real high level, what's the reason the traffic cases are going down so much?
I wish Chief was still in here. A lot of it is calls, the need for officers on other calls, like
okay.
we're saying.
Yeah.
A lot of it also is it's harder to speed because of congestion.
Yeah.
At certain times.
We want to, but we can't.
Councilmember Harris just asked a great question. What is, so this is countywide. We're seeing the same drop in traffic cases, not just South Jordan. It's countywide.
I think there's the quota thing was a big deal that reverberated through. And so basically you told officers there's no expectations in writing a ticket. And we cannot tell a police officer you have to write this many tickets. That's bounceful. So that kind of happened. As things get more congested, there's less speeding, frankly. It's good news, bad news. I think younger officers are less inclined to use their discretion to write a speeding ticket than in my generation. I'm just telling you the straight scoop there. So I think all of those things combine, and I think if you did this on a statewide basis, you'd see the same kind of decline.
Yeah, this is the top four counties. So this is, that top line is Salt Lake County and then Utah County, Weber and Davis at the bottom. So if we take out Salt Lake, just so you can kind of compare the bottom ones better,
and
they're all declining as well.
This is Weber, this is Davis.
Yeah. We also saw that when we were struggling to get police officers and everybody had openings, agencies moved their traffic back to patrol, back to investigations, and they did less traffic enforcement. And that happened during the pandemic time frame too, and I don't think we ever got back entirely as a profession.
Development patterns as well. Tamara and I were just kind of reminiscing about when we both moved to the city 20 years ago. The 118th South used to just be the straight shot from the west side out, and there was nothing out there, and you could just kind of go.
Right.
And then they put in the Daybreak Parkway, and everything changed, and you just can't go anymore. You can't, and so there's not opportunities. Like, it is different. The development patterns are different as it's filled in.
You can go back to 1997, I guarantee there are issues.
So this one's our criminal cases. So this is all South Jordan cases, just our criminal ones. So if you see this green line that's highlighted here, this is domestic violence. So in 2022, we started on this sharp uptick. And we haven't updated this data set. So, yeah, up here, highlight some of these other ones for you.
What's that huge? Yeah.
That one's theft. So we saw some decline in theft cases that were prosecuted.
Part of
this is going all the way through the courts.
Yeah, part of the theft thing is Walmart quit calling for a while, and we've been going back and forth with Walmart. Jeff?
Well, and if
Chief Clark? What's part that? Of the theft up and down is when Walmart decides to engage.
Yeah, Walmart is obviously our
can,
number
but
one.
It's a little, it messes with everything.
It messes up.
Well, no, it's really the Jordan Parkway.
The one closer to I-15?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's because people can jump on and off. And very frankly, not many of them are our residents.
Yeah, a lot of them are our residents.
They're not our residents.
Well, and that's the thing to keep in mind when we look at all this is hardly any of these are our residents.
I mean, they went through a time where they weren't stopping anybody, essentially. And so that creates those waves.
And then they got the new asset protection that wrote us a letter and said, could you start doing it?
We've seen them now. They've gone away from, they've closed down some of the self-serve
lines. Yeah.
Lines.
Well, they always have somebody watching now, too.
Yeah. Nationally, there's whole store changes going, chains going away from self-serve, self-checkout.
So this is just our percent of cases, what's criminal, what's traffic. So regardless of how many there are in a year, you can see we've started to file more criminal cases. Criminal cases are now more at about 20-21%, whereas they used to be 11% of that total cases. So we're seeing that flip-flop.
So which means 7 of those, on average, would be South Jordan residents, and 14 of the 21 out of 100 would not be, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Which is going to be true of any city's court, right?
Right.
So that's where you get in that question.
But
is that regional
to me,
yeah.
That's exactly what I was just telling the mayors. I think it really comes down to, are we providing a regional service that could be provided by actually a regional server?
And I say,
us
I would only agree, any city in a metropolitan area.
Yeah.
I think if you get out to like Richfield or, you know, some, it's different. And so they need to evaluate it differently.
Yeah, definitely.
So I just want to say that it took me about 2 years of even just knowing that this was, just knowing the data and looking at it, whatever. And I just wasn't in favor of making a change and doing away with the court. I think every small town in America, pretty much, they might not have anything else, but they have a courthouse. You know, I mean, it's just kind of what it is. And in my mind, any city, any community should have a courthouse. What changed my way of looking at this? And it's hard. I don't love it. I don't love it. But what changed my way of looking at this was looking at the data, the money, and the number of residents being served and not served by this, and what other opportunities there are. And as we as a city for, you know, 20 plus years have stood by our, more than 20 years, our priority-based budgeting, it's the reason that we, it's the same process that did away with the marathon. It's the same process that have brought us other programs that we've determined as a city, as a professional staff, expertise, and as an elected body, this is worth the investment from a city. And in my heart, I don't want to see this go away. In a fiduciary obligation to the residents of South Jordan with their tax dollars, I have a hard time defending it now that it's changed. Do you know what I mean? It's tough. It's not easy. You said it's not. It's hard. It is hard.
Yeah.
This is not an easy conversation to have. It's a big decision, and we are making a decision that is going to play out over, that we're going to feel 4, 5, 6 years from now. We don't know what the legislature will do, but we do know if the county does indeed apply in 2015 or whatever that works, however they approach the legislature about eliminating their court, and we no longer have a district court, then if we ever decided we did want to do away with our court, we would have to do the same thing and go get permission from the legislature, yes or no. Right now it's our decision. In the future it might not be. And so I just wanted you to know where I'm at with it. It's taken me a long time to reach this point, and in my heart of hearts, I don't want to, but I feel like as a steward and somebody who stands by our priority-based budgeting, I feel like I have to, even though I don't like it. Anyway, that's kind of where I'm at. We are at 6:30 exactly, but we only have till the 30th of this month.
Yeah,
to decide. Otherwise, it's just decided for us.
So I can bring it back in the next meeting. You can ruminate on
it. Do you want to think about it for the next 2 weeks, and then we come back to our next meeting? We have to make a decision.
I
just need
to know whether to send
the
letter. You've already passed the resolution, and so, but I sat on the letter as we committed to have this further discussion.
And can we just make sure it's at the top of our meeting so we don't have to worry about running out of time?
Yep.
Is there any particular data you'd like me to bring back? We didn't get to this cost data, but
we can inundate you with data if you want it. All it will show is what we've told you at a high level, that under a priority-based budgeting analysis, the court does not pass as a program that stays.
It's the same way that I wish the marathon still did. Same way I wish doing a pageant did. We're the only city who doesn't do a pageant, and this is the same reason why. You know, there's other things I wish still did too. Go ahead.
My question is, as our population grows, what does that curve start looking like? So when we look at, we're built out to, you know, to capacity, you know, and when we forecast out, you know, what does that look like? So that's something
I don't know.
That's something I'd like to. That's something I'd like to see how they, you know, yeah.
What we can do is look at the past, and as our population has grown in the last 10 years, what has it done?
Yeah, because we know it's the last 10 years have dropped.
Yeah,
we know we went from, if I remember your numbers just now, and this answers your earlier question.
Yeah, but traffic counts aren't going to drop by the same rate, you know, moving, you know.
Yeah, and that I don't know how we.
It's not going to be completely linear, so.
Yeah. I don't know how we could estimate that, because we just don't know how enforcement's going to be 10 years from now, all sorts of things.
Well, I bet between some of the brilliant mathematicians we have in our city, I bet you guys could probably just toss it around and come up with some ideas.
We'll toss it around.
Yeah.
Okay. Because we're out of time, let's bring this back at the start of the next session. Think about it. Ask any questions you want over the next 2 weeks. Get as informed as you can be, because we have to make a decision. Okay. Either way.
Just make sure it's at the top.
Thank you.
The work session's full, so we'll put it in the regular session. But it'll be right there for you guys.
That almost seems more fitting for a decision like this, honestly.
It's great.
Okay. It's a big decision. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it. All right. Can I get a motion to adjourn?
Mayor, I make the motion that we adjourn this meeting.
Thank you. We have a motion. Can I get a second?
I'll second.
Thank you. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned.